Very good speakers and a very interesting subject. We will talk another time about interconnections. You have an example, it's the Galicia link, and you have very, very, very good people to talk about your experiences in this field. I think my colleague Cabezon Ruiz need to take a flight, so I will make the at the same time the moderation and report, and the best I can do as a moderator is to pass the word first to Jorge Vasconcelos, then I know as a Portuguese regulator of the agency for regulation, not for producers, like I 2 days ago in Brussels, I called the president of ACER as the president of the producers of regulation. So, Carlos, 10 minutes, if all people use 10 minutes, you have 1 hour. You can have to have some discussion, but even the parliament in more 1 hour, 1 hour 15, you don't stay here in prison, but all the services will beginning to finish the work. Okay, Jorge.
Thank you very much. Thank you very much for inviting me, and thank you very much for staying in the room at 5:20 on a Friday afternoon when the sun is shining outside in this wonderful city. I will try to be very brief, and in order to avoid that you fall asleep, I will try to be also provocative in line, by the way, with the previous conversation we had in the previous panel. So, here it's very nice weather, but in the northern part of Portugal and in the northwestern part of Spain, it rains all the time. I don't know whether you have been there. It's a wonderful landscape, very green, very nice people, very nice monuments, but lots of rain. And that's why there is so much hydroelectricity. Okay? If you look at Spain, the highest amount of hydroelectricity is in the northwestern part of Spain, Galicia and around it. And if you look to Portugal, the same thing. The southern part of Portugal, only roughly 1,000 megawatts of hydroelectricity, all our hydroelectricity in the north. And that was indeed where electrification started, in the northern part of Portugal. By the way, that's also where the country started 800 years ago. So electrification, hydroelectricity started in the north, and of course had to come to the south. So the first transmission lines were built. And that was the picture until the early 1960s, when the system, the electricity system in Portugal, was more than 90% renewable hydro. And at that time, hydro was not enough, so the first power plants, thermal power plants were built, and they were built in the south, where the capital city was and still is, and also where the heavy industry was located. So we had, at that time, in the 60s, 70s, strongly seasonal variations of flows in the lines, okay? Winter time, lots of rain, lots of hydroelectricity flows coming from the north to the south, dry summer weather flows going from the south to the north. Spain had also a similar experience, but Spain is about 5 times bigger than Portugal in electrical terms, and and built, of course, more power plants than Portugal. So from a pure hydro system, we came to a mixed 50-50 system, and then in the 80s, 90s, more thermal than hydro system here in Portugal. Just before liberalization started in the early 1990s, 400 kV interconnection was built between the northern part of Portugal and the northwestern part of Spain, interconnecting these two areas, because it improved the flows within the Iberian Peninsula. And if you look at the feasibility studies done at that time, you can see that nothing but the reduction of losses in the transmission system provided for a very quick amortization of this investment. So nothing than just reducing electricity losses in the transmission system. And that was before liberalization and before regulation, which is, as you know, supposed to give incentives to the system operators to reduce losses, among other things. So when liberalization starts, officially in February 1997, as you know, with the first directive, but in fact, both Portugal and Spain had started liberalization before the first directive, after the UK and Norway and Sweden, Portugal and Spain were the pioneers in continental Europe. Most of you have probably never heard about that, but sometimes, yes, Southern European countries can be pioneers. And that was the case. And the interconnection was developed between the two countries, between Portugal and Spain, to support the electricity trade across the border. If you look at the statistics, and my good friend Marcel Bial was collecting these statistics for many years, so he knows better than I. If you take this period of liberalization in Europe and you look at the amount of interconnection capacity that was built, commissioned, whatever you want, in this period, you see that the border between Portugal and Spain was always the best one. And you look at many other borders where the amount of incremental capacity is 0.0. What I mean by this is that Portugal and Spain managed together to build the necessary infrastructure to enable the appropriate level, the economic, the cost-efficient level of interconnection between the two markets. And when we started the operation of the single spot market in 2007, we had market splitting for many hours of the year. And thanks to the investments that were finished shortly thereafter, we nowadays have almost no market splitting. We have almost always the same price between the two countries. What I mean is that in terms of liberalization, Portugal and Spain did what they should do according to the European directives. And even in 2001, the two governments decided to, that was 2001, that was before the second electricity package, again, Portugal and Spain anticipating the European developments, the two governments decided to set up a common Iberian market with common rules and common governance. That was the story of liberalization, and I think there is not much more to add. But then starts the second story, the story about 2020, the story about renewables. And here what we saw was a kind of repetition of what happened 70 years ago with hydroelectricity. The northern part of Portugal, the northwestern part of Spain, again the pioneers, this time not hydroelectricity, but wind, onshore wind electricity generation. So suddenly we have this part of the Iberian Peninsula, not this one, the northern part, northwestern part of the Iberian Peninsula, with a huge amount of hydro and wind. And what is reasonable, what is rational to do to combine the two? And that's what we are doing, namely retrofitting existing hydro power stations, replacing the machinery with modern machines that allow us to use pump storage machines with a very fast response time. So we are creating in this part of Iberia the ideal conditions for the optimum management of renewable resources. Again, very good example. And that's in this context that we are talking now about this interconnection, the Galicia link between the northern part of Portugal and the northern part of Spain. And of course it makes sense. It makes a lot of sense because it allows us to optimize, even at Iberian level, the use of renewable energy. Now, I think that for some of you, the Galicia Link, in fact, means something else. And that has to do with the discussion of the previous panel, the European-wide interconnections. And the Galicia Link probably means for you this idea or ideal or whatever of interconnecting the Iberian Peninsula with the UK, since it has proved so difficult for non-financial reasons to build the interconnection between France and Spain. Some people think that it's good to look for alternatives and to build this link. And you heard in the previous session that we have a patriotic unanimity, both the minister, the present minister, and the previous minister, Mr. Zorrinho, they both agree that it's a good idea to put European public money on these interconnections and to develop the interconnections. And even if necessary, Portugal will veto everything else if we don't get the interconnections. Now, I know that this is a very patriotic attitude, but I am not a politician, so I am allowed to question the wisdom of this patriotic design. And I have two questions, or two objections, if you want. The first one is a very simple one. If the UK LRMC is, sorry, the long run marginal cost is 125 euro per megawatt hour. And we know that in Portugal, our long run marginal cost is nowadays onshore wind, and it is less than 65 euro per megawatt hours. Why should we share our benefits with the UK? What is the benefit of building an interconnector to sell cheap Portuguese electricity to the UK, or to Germany, or to France, or to any other country? If we have more natural resources, if we have more hours of sun, more hours of wind, we have better electricity price, our industry will be more competitive, that's good for the country. Why should I share this with our competitors? I don't see the reason. Why should Portugal ask for the interconnection now? Not 20 years ago for the purpose of liberalization, but not, now we are not talking about liberalization. Now we are not talking about market prices. Now we are talking about state aid, subsidized prices, who are de facto the long-run marginal costs of our systems. Am I wrong? I mean, these were the data, the figures that were given in the previous session. I'm not inventing anything. I'm just using the information I received 1 hour ago. And I'm trying to check whether the conclusions that were drawn are coherent with the input data that we received. So that's the first provocation, if you want. But there is a second reason why I doubt that asking for more interconnections is a good thing for Portugal or for any other country. The reason is that internet is there, demand response is coming, demand management is coming, electric mobility is coming, more and more charging points everywhere, more and more new business models are developing throughout Europe. Call it virtual power plants, call it local distribution level management of generation and demand, and so on and so forth. So is it reasonable to embark on these long-term and long-distance interconnections when we have not yet designed the market model for 2020 and 2030? Are we sure that these long-term investments, we're talking about cables and lines for 40, 50 years, will really help us in the future, in 2020, 2030? Is this the kind of investment we need? is this the best way, the best place to put our money, especially public money, today? Or should we start by implementing the smart grid, by exploiting and optimizing at the local level? I would think that it would be perhaps wiser first to agree on the kind of governance we want to have in the Iberia Peninsula in order to optimize all the resources, not only hydro and wind, but also demand, existing demand and future demand, mobility, for instance, to optimize all these resources at this level, and only then think about the need for interconnection capacity, for trade. I am afraid that by jumping enthusiastically in these very visible and easy projects of new lines, we are avoiding to give an answer to the question, okay, these lines for which kind of market model? So you see, I have these two basic questions, and perhaps we can discuss them.
Thank you very much. Very interesting questions. If you wish to have a European energy market, we need to have interconnection. What kind of interconnection? More smart, less smart, more physical, less physical? It's a very interesting issue to discuss. And now I give the floor to Carlos Pimenta, a big expert and also entrepreneur in this subject. Pioneer. The word I try to find is pioneer. Pioneer. Como é que se diz?
Pioneer. Thank you very much, Mr. President. Carlos, it is a pleasure, and thank you for very kind words. I will now go on what Jorge Vasconcelos said. I think that we are really in a big transition moment. First of all, we should not allow the throwing out the model that allowed the only meaningful reduction of CO2 in Europe and the only meaningful increase on sustainability was really in the electrical sectors through the renewables. Unfortunately, there was advances in many other sectors, but not as dramatic as they should have been, and the state of the European DTS is a disgrace compared to what you were expecting. And to keep these the good moments of this model, of course, we need this regulatory stability, binding targets to 2030, everything that Claude Turmes and the other speakers said before, the interconnection and so on. But I would like to take from Jorge Vasconcelos and to say that for me, it's important that we open the way for a new model for the energy markets and for the energy supply that is emerging. And this will be, in my view, as dramatic change as the internet and mobility was for telecommunications. We have witnessed in the recent past two changes that were not anticipated when I was in the European Parliament, or even when the present targets for 2020 were established. One was the dramatic reduction in price of investment and production of electricity from renewable sources. From my own experience as an engineer and as a project manager, I went in 10 years from having to have something like 110 euros per megawatt hour for a wind project in Portugal onshore, to the last wind park that was connected just 2 months ago with machines built in Portugal, with thousands of jobs that have been created, and is selling at 69 euros per megawatt hour. What means directly competitive with combined cycle gas. Directly competitive. So nobody was anticipated. But on solar was more dramatic. The first solar farm megawatt dimension that I directed personally as a project manager in 2008 on the megawatt size it was 5.5 million euros per megawatt installed. The last one I directed was last year, and one finishing this year even better, was 1.2 million euros, and this year it will be one. What means dividing by five in 6-7 years? Then nobody was expecting that you could scale down this shrinking of cost to the solar roof of a home user. So if the first change allowed for renewable energy stakeholders to be competitive on the top of supplying the grid, and so it diversified the centralized production with new stakeholders, new companies, new production on the top, all of a sudden, at the home user, at the supermarket user, at the local community, the local hotel, the local hospital, the local community, you could also produce on the side of the consumer, creating de facto a new concept of prosumer, producer and consumer. If the evolution on storage, decentralized storage, batteries and other devices, will follow this trend, and doesn't have to be tomorrow, but there are so many promising projects that one of them, two of them, five of them will produce meaningful results. If you add smart grids, like Jorge Vasconcelos just said, you know, it's not the capacity to provide solutions on the consumer side, on the distribution side, that are competitive to the big centralized solutions, even the ones from renewable energy, all of a sudden you have a total different market. And this is not only for electricity, it's for fuels. Because if you have advances in batteries, you make sure that electrical cars become really competitive, not only because they are nicer and they answer better and they produce less fumes in the city and less noise, but also because they are cheaper, because they are more efficient. And as the minister said, Portugal has a lot of sun and wind and can propel its fleet of cars with renewables. So what I see, and energy is a long-term business as well, what I see is that the people that care about climate change, the environment, the renewables, citizen participation, so a different kind of society, more open, with more jobs, with more sustainability in every aspect, should look, when speaking about these issues, also thinking that a new model is emerging. A new model is emerging. And this has to be put in equation. When you plan a 50-year investment, you have to ask, hey, what happened if it's not needed? That I finished. I just wanted to say one thing apart. It's something that I have here in my throat for 15 years, 20 years. Is for me the scandal of the allocation of research and development money in the European Union. The most of the money goes for fusion and fission. Fusion and fission gets every year more money than all the other forms of energy together, including oil and gas and coal and renewables. And this has to stop. We have to balance the charts.
Thank you very much, Carlos. The whole of a keynote speecher or a input speecher is exactly to put questions. And now you have four speakers to give the answers. The first is Jan Hesmans. And as you have there, which is your function, I will not repeat. Hans, please.
What was the question?
No, the question is to, now is to try to answer these good questions that the speakers put on the table and to make your comments, please.
This one. So I'm Marcel Bian for the European solar thermal electricity industry. And George, if you put a provocative question, you'll get a provocative answer. If you ask at a European event, EU event, it's called Why to Share, So why Europe? This is my provocative answer. Of course, you gave at the same time part of the answer to your own question. Of course, the current market design, and we will maybe, even if it's late, go into details about that, does not allow currently to have the most equitable, the fairest sharing of the benefits of now talking of interconnections. So this is the part of my question. I would like my most important contribution, or what I didn't hear today about interconnections is the following that I would like to add. Why are we calling as an industry for interconnection? Of course, there is the story, but this is in the law, the 10% interconnection capacity, and even some calls are going in the right direction of 15%. It's about access to this IEM and the fair access to all member states. But what nobody mentioned today, it's another story. It has something to do also related to the renewables with the complementarity of renewable energy sources. What do I mean with that? There is, between north and south, between wind and solar, there is a very important, very easy to show complementarity in the resources, in the available resource. Interconnection, to make it short, is the key to use this complementarity between geographically and also between the energy sources. And even now, looking a little bit more into details into the solar field, which is called solar, in reality we have, at least for electricity, two sectors. One very well developed, this is the PV solar sector, and the sector I'm representing here, which is the solar thermal, the story with the mirrors and the towers. Here the complementarity is within the solar technologies, the fact that solar thermal is able to shift generation to the moment of the days where you need this energy. This means we will, and this is not our industry that say that, after 2030, we believe even after 2025, a massive shift in development of solar energy between PV and solar thermal. And solar thermal will be the key to balance the system with non-fossil sources. Somebody said, this was close to my point, today we do not want e-mobility based on coal or gas. I said, we must not have balancing systems based on gas or coal. This is also possible, and interconnection are needed for allowing this, and this will be a benefit shared by everybody in Europe, sharing this balancing energy produced in a given place. I will stop now
Thank you, Marcel. I'm sorry for my mistake in the beginning to present people. It's normal. Now it begins to be a pattern in my moderation. Now I have no reason to make another, because I need I know very well João Faria Conceição from Rennes, and I give him the floor.
Thank you very much. To continue this provocative session, now we are in a Friday afternoon. Let me give me my perspective as a responsible for the TSO, the transmission system operator. I'm not here to question the long-term perspectives of policymakers. The perspective of a TSO is to give answers on the online time, because if we fail to do our job, if you go to switch on the light and the light does not switch, it's my head that the first one to roll. So I'm there to give answers to the problems of today. And I will go to interconnections in a second, because I believe that interconnections give, basically on the short-term basis, two key benefits. The first one, security of supply, and the second one, integration of markets. I do agree with Mr. Vasconcelos, we need, and Mr. Pimenta, we need to think on the medium-long term, because we are speaking about lots of big amounts of money on the investments, but I do think that we also need to take care of what's going on today. And let me pick something to make it clear for you to understand. On security of supply purpose, as you know, Portugal has been investing a lot in the last few years in renewables, which is very good, reinforce our objective of reducing our energy dependence. It's fantastic in terms of sustainability, but there's a slight issue on a system management perspective, that renewables are very volatile, especially wind is quite volatile. And sometimes we have lots of renewables available, and sometimes we don't have renewables available. So we have to cope with this volatility in order to ensure that the electricity flows all the time to consumers. And to give you an example, on the last 1st of April of this current year, in the first half of the day in Portugal, we had this specific situation where only with wind and the run of rivers dams, so the dams in hydro that we cannot sustain the water that it goes and we need to produce, we were able to generate more electricity than it was needed by consumers. And as we don't have yet the so-called storage capacity, like Mr. Pimenta was saying, there was only one way to cope with this excess of electricity, was to export. But unfortunately, electricity doesn't flow with the air, so it needs wires and its interconnections to export it. So first issue is security of supply. This was the good part, we were excess of electricity, but we had also in the recent past the other extreme scenario, where suddenly wind stopped blowing and we were out of electricity, so we needed to use interconnections to import. So the first example for me in terms of security of supply is this. The second one is integration of markets. And here I'm going to use one point that Mr. Vasconcelos mentioned about the integration of the two markets, Portugal and Spain, and to give you some figures what we are speaking about. In 2007, at 80% of the time of all year, the Portuguese system was on average 10 euros per megawatt hour more expensive than the Spanish system in wholesale prices. So if you do the calculations, and if you consider that we consume about 50 terawatt hours per year, it would mean that overall there was an extra 400 million euros per year more expensive for the Portuguese consumers than in the Spanish consumers. 6 years later, 2013, the same price difference and the same time of the year where there was a difference in prices between Portugal and Spain reduces from the 80% of the year hours to only 10% of these hours, and the price difference was less than 1 euro per megawatt hour. So as you can see, this effort that the two TSOs have invested in terms of interconnecting Portugal and Spain were projects with an effective payback very, very, very short. So, because 400 million a year, at least on the Portuguese consumer's perspective, was more than enough to pay all the money that was invested in interconnections to link Portugal and Spain. So, to answer to the provocative question of Mr. Vasconcelos, I do think that the English consumers would like to share these benefits, as we did in the past with the Spanish. Last, I would just like to mention one other thing, and to reinforce the importance of at least on a TSO perspective, of these investments. We are dealing, like it was said by the previous speakers, with very unique times. And times where there is a significant trend by traders, by suppliers, to look it on the short term. No one, no utility, no supplier of you is willing to commit big amounts of energy supply for a very long time. They are willing to do short-term contracts because they don't know what's going on in the future. Meaning that market is very fast to adjust and to learn and to play the rules in place. So my last comment regarding interconnection is going in this direction, because if you don't reinforce the goal of Europe to integrate markets, and I learned in school that the bigger the market, the better or the easier for you to dilute costs, to foster competitiveness and to promote a market-oriented approach. What is going to happen is that the so-called natural monopolies that existed in the past and the EU policy tried to change will be created again, because market players are very fast to learn. And what they will do is they will rearrange again the market, and they will impose their own bargaining power towards consumers. So my last comment is for you to consider this following approach. On a TSO perspective, the interconnection also works as a kind of a virtual power plant that is there also to compensate the natural trends of market players, dominant market players, to impose their rules. And the bigger this interconnection you have, the less power these market players will have to impose their own rules and to force their own prices.
Thank you. I remember that I asked a question linked with these last words of João to the failed Commissioner Bratusek, and but she is now able to answer this question. I think she is not able to answer any question. I will give now the floor to Thomas, please.
Thank you. I will try to be very brief, Mr. Chair. When I went to university, I learned that subsidiarity in the EU law means that you should solve questions at the level where it is most easily solved. Now, this is what we did with the internal market. We took away borders because it's to the benefit of consumer and to the benefit of business. It works well. We put the power, so to say, at the EU Commission level, because we did not want the national states to have that mandate, because they couldn't agree between themselves on removing these barriers. I think electricity and energy is no different. And while I love bashing the EU Commission, actually there's a few other things in the world I like more than bashing the EU Commission, I think it doesn't help to bash them, because it's the member states that does not want to give away this power, because energy is used as a cash cow for other social programs in their countries. That's obvious. And then the renewable energy is blamed afterwards for the price level. So interconnection is very much related to the question of how do we deal with energy within the EU. And of course, you can hear that I think that what was enacted in Lisbon, I believe it was in 2000 and, well,
right?
I can't remember. In two, was it in two? Yes, it was. Should actually now start being implemented, because there you have some possibilities. I have high expectations with the new Spanish commissioner, because Spain has a certain interest in this. So having said that, I think that the, let's say, Iberian bottleneck, the Iberian Peninsula not being able to sell its electricity to the rest of Europe, green electricity, because, I'm sorry to say, and I know it's not nice to say, of nuclear protectionism from France is absurd. Is absurd. And that has to be addressed. And that is a major problem in this whole discussion, and I think it needs to be addressed in Brussels. We can talk in length about all kinds of technical details, but as long as that is not politically dealt with in the Council and in the Commission, then I fear that we will get nowhere. And then my final point is that obviously interconnectors as such is to the benefit of business and consumers. I mean, it is so obvious that in those areas where you have installed a floating electricity towards where the demand is from where the production is, the price is cheaper. It's obvious. It is like that. Be it what kind of energy it is, doesn't matter. And that, to me, is the proof, and we don't need more proof than that. It's just a matter, do we want to take this political step of loosening the national grip on energy? Thank you, Chair.
I think the best to finish this first round in the panel is to word about a good practice. I will give the word to talk about the North Sea Grid Initiative.
I know it's difficult. Thank you very much. I represent NSCOGI, which is the North Sea Countries Offshore Grid Initiative. For those who don't know what it is 10 countries bordering the North Sea or the Northern Seas, because Ireland and Sweden are also members, and the European Commission, together with ENTSO-E and Acer, working on development of an offshore grid in the North Sea, and also connection to the existing grid and maybe making a new grid. That being said, there's one of the things we did there, and that's I will start coming back on what George said, is you start what kind of grid are you making? How do you connect? I must say I chair the program board of NSCOGI, so I get all sorts of people asking to connect and to interconnect, and short break, maybe not now. Everything is possible. I mean, if you look, and I've asked TSOs also and technology providers. We can even link with my small country, Belgium. We can link to Iceland, and they have a lot of hydro, and it is possible, but it costs you a lot of money. We can link to Norway, but it will cost you a lot of money. Because I'm coming back to the initial question, and that is the Galicia link. Is this, and it's not up to me to say if that's profitable or not, if you should do that or not. If it's really true that France is only protecting its own nuclear industry, I am not here to protect France or to defend France. There's all sorts of considerations to be taken, and the first one is, I agree with Thomas, is that we have to go to Brussels, to my capital, but also the capital of the European Union, and say that we need to solve the problem. Because if you look at the possible projects of common interest, which is the program of the European Commission, where we all have our own programs and so on, you see Spain and Portugal basically as a black spot, where you don't have interconnections. But is this the solution? I don't know. Maybe it's good to think about it, but maybe it's better, and that's what we have done with NSCOGI, is look where do we build, where do we roll out a net on the North Sea, where do we have a mesh grid? Yes, we can have a mesh grid in the North Sea, but not everywhere. From time to time, it's not necessary to have a mesh grid. It's from time to time to have a simple link to your country. It's what you need. And like I said, I can start discussions tomorrow with Norway, linking Belgium to Norway, but then that would be too costly. So that's the message we try to give with Inskogi, is that you have to take care with this, and it takes a while, and I do know that Portugal and Spain are waiting already a long time, and that there's a huge possibility, more than huge possibility here, but there's all sorts of different things to be done, and I don't know if this is the best solution. I really don't know. I mean, maybe you can look at the south also. Maybe we can revive the DESERTEC project, which was once one of the great projects, but we don't hear. Oh, yeah.
Claude? It died 2 days ago.
Yeah, I know. I mean, that's why I look at you, Claude. I know. But why don't we revive that? And there's huge possibilities there also. And then one final thing. I do agree with my colleague from the Palestinian next to me. We are going to a new market, and that's one of the things we have to think about also. And then think about is, and that is what we are doing also. And I'm talking as representative of a member state. We are thinking about new markets. Do we really need capacity markets, or are we setting in everything on demand side response, flexibility? And then somebody said this morning about France. Indeed, yeah, they don't have flexibility with nuclear. But I mean, my own country doesn't have that much flexibility either. So I think those are the messages, and I'm not saying sit back and relax, but do think again before you start rushing into what I think is an adventure.
Thank you. Before to give the floor to people that want to make questions, Professor Jorge Vasconcelos and also Marcel Stella ask for a 60 seconds extra time, please.
Well, thank you, Chairman. But since I got the wrong answers to my question, I would like to answer my own question, if you allow me.
It's but practical.
But before that, let me just tell for the benefit of the young people in this room that I am not an European skeptic. And in fact, if we have cross-border electricity trade since the year 2000, I think that I gave a contribution to that. So I was joking, I was provoking, but of course I am a firm believer in the European integration. But I think that we should avoid sometimes the common wisdom, and we should ask fundamental questions. That's what I try to do. And the truth is that energy consumers in Portugal and Spain did not benefit from the first 17 years of energy liberalization in Europe. That's the truth. We were not able to get access to the lower energy prices in Central Europe. So now that we are thinking about a kind of second phase of liberalization, where we have to combine liberalization with other policy goals, it's good to think whether the Iberian consumers can be somehow compensated for the losses they had for 17 years. Mm-hmm. And perhaps others should pay now for these interconnections, because now it's the others who want to have them, not us. That was my point. But I got the wrong answers, because you all followed my reasoning, which was wrong, of course, that we should think in terms of marginal prices. That was in the past. That was in phase one of liberalization. But this is not true anymore. And you are copying in your countries what we have always had in Portugal. And that's why what Mr. João Conceição told you is not the full story. Why? Because in Portugal, 85% of electricity demand is covered by state-guaranteed electricity generation. It is not only renewables, it is not only cogeneration, it's also the so-called stranded costs recovery. If you add these three things, you get about 85%. So independently of the market price, consumers will always pay this price. Okay, the guaranteed state price. And this is what is happening now in all your countries. And this will happen more and more because we have more and more state guarantees for renewables. And we are seeing now these horrible 35-year long-term contracts. And what does it mean? That we have average prices in these countries that are completely isolated from market prices. Okay? Consumers have to pay these average costs and not the marginal prices. So my question was wrong, in fact. And what we have to look is at the average costs being developed with all these liabilities, with all these state guarantees that we have for conventional and non-conventional generation in the countries. And if we want to have a serious, intellectually honest debate about the new market in Europe, we have to put on the table these true costs. We should not hide them. We should not pretend anymore that we have energy-based marginalist models working well, because this is not true. So let's put on the table the reality of our systems, not only Portugal and Spain, but all the other countries. And then, starting from then, let's think about how to redesign our model, okay?
Thank you. Marcel?
One more comment. The first one is obviously, as a representative of Village Gauloise, you said, Claude, by passport, I am one of them. I am sure, of course, that there must be a deal with the French to move on this interconnection issue. Maybe, now I ask you, maybe in the context of their troubles with the public deficit they present now, this would be a nice opportunity. This being said, and because I was working many years with the TSOs, there are really easier things, or easy or lower hanging fruits to address also, and simple things. For example, when we ask why or where to set, where to place an interconnector or the reality, the mission of the TSOs as of today, as driven by the relevant regulation, this is 1220, is such that the TSOs do not have the mandate to optimize grid or network development at European level. The way how they do that is a kind of building up a European model based on the single TSOs announcement and forecasts. And just to, because it cannot be so long, I asked a couple of weeks ago, talking about capacity allocation, and they put a questionnaire and they said, who should do the optimization at European level? And the answer was, who else can do that if not this body called TSO Cooperation Platform? And for Iberia, just to know, there is the TSO do not talk always among with the Finns, and so there is a regional group. And you will see in the network development only things that are allowed or blocked at the level of these three or four TSOs in the world. And this is just one example of things. If you go with the 10E regulation and the story about the PCIs, and how project promoters may push also interconnection projects, same story. There are things to be that are in the law already, in the regulation, and that are not implemented. 8 member states out of 28 have implemented the principle of the one-stop shop for this 10 PCIs, and for the manual, the so-called manual of procedures. So this is a severe issue at the moment, how to optimize at European level the interconnection, the development of interconnection.
Thank you. I think we begin delayed this section. We have more 15 minutes
I prefer to ask if someone wants to make a question, please. And if the question is adequate, I give the floor to you, Thomas, to answer the question and also to say what you want. Please.
Thank you. Actually, my question is addressed to Professor George Vasconcelos. It's two questions, if I may. The first one is, I liked your input statement, and my question is, what are we doing wrong? Because in the Council, it's only Portugal and Spain fighting for the interconnections. France is, of course, blocking it, but we wouldn't expect otherwise. But the other countries are not. They should be the one asking for interconnections from the Iberian Peninsula in order to have cheaper electricity. So what are we doing wrong not to get that message across that electricity from the Iberian Peninsula is cheaper and they should be the ones more interested in these interconnections? This is the first question. If somebody else wants to comment on that, of course, I would welcome. The second question is about the market model, because we've been asking the market model. There is no market, and therefore cannot talk about the perfect market model because there isn't any. But let's fight for it. But I haven't understood what I should be asking for. What should we ask for? Because on the one hand, we are asking. Okay, the one thing I know is that we need to realize that there is no market and that everyone is getting subsidies, not only renewables. But then, what's the way forward? Should we not get any subsidies and be market-based? That's what the stated guidelines say. Or should we ask for long-term? Because on the one hand, we have the stated guidelines market-based, and on the other hand, we have the Commission approving a long-term contract for nuclear, but it could have been other technologies. So should we have PPAs, and PPAs is not a market-based, or it's not a spot market-based, or should we have something else? What should we be asking for? Thank you.
Questions, please. Please.
Yeah, I mean, the obvious benefits of interconnection relate to two things. Firstly, the ability to actually share low carbon energy across Europe, and secondly, to enable national systems to balance themselves much more effectively than is the case at present, without actually having to invest in a whole load of new plant, particularly mineral plant, in the future. And the problem, I think, is that actually the structure under which we are discussing interconnectors doesn't actually optimize either of those two things. And for example, I'm going to take the UK for an example. Part of the reason why the UK has been so keen to develop Hinkley C at a ludicrous subsidy is because it is seen as part of an additional capacity arrangement which itself would not be necessary were the UK to be properly interconnected with the rest of Europe. And similarly, the UK is potentially embarking on a large new development of new gas capacity for reasons that would not be necessary either if the UK were properly interconnected with the rest of Europe. So actually we're looking at it precisely the wrong way round, it seems to me, that actually that European interconnection as a public good, as a facilitator, not as a series of merchant developments, which is what the UK is looking at the moment, actually in themselves create added value by reducing the necessity to actually develop other capacity resources to create that balance in the first place. And that would seem to me, in terms of how the EU approaches this, to actually enable the EU to take some of that added value out of member states where they are actually getting facilitated balancing as a result of interconnection in the first place. And that seems to me, to some extent, to be the answer to the question about why should anyone sell to anyone else? Well, if you do it properly in these terms, then not only do you get a benefit for your own end of the sale, but also you get the part or we should get, the part share in that added value for the ability that interconnection balancing produces across Europe as a whole. And sorry, this is supposed to be a question. But
thank you.
I mean,
Thank you.
It's
clear now, I think, the question.
A better way to look at it.
More questions? If there are not more questions, I will give 1 minute from my high hand to the hand to all the speakers, and 2 minutes to Professor Vasconcelos because they have two questions. Please.
Well, I do agree with what you said. I mean, answering directly to you first, so that Professor Vasconcelos answers the kind lady. I do agree with that, but you have to put everything on the table because it was said here, so I don't know, from one of my colleagues here, that unfortunately as TSOs cannot find the right of ways that they would like to build this infrastructure, meaning that sometimes they are forced to go into alternatives that become much more expensive and much less effective. But in the end, it's precisely what you said. But also you have to bear in mind that the TSOs are not investing on these very long-term projects, very capital-intensive, without having some guarantees. And the risk I see as a TSO is that if everyone starts to deciding that I prefer to have my generation capacity in my backyard than interconnecting the different countries in Europe, what we will have is that countries will and regions will get more and more isolated. Because as the moment you launch a project on the generation capacity on point X, this becomes a sunk cost. And you are not going to react on a so-called theoretical thinking that sunk costs are sunk, so you have to forget them, because you are going to do all the best to amortize them. And I'm very conscious about what Professor Vasconcelos said about the all extra cost that exists in generation, and they do exist. So the problem I see is that, and here is honestly not at the ends of the TSOs, it's in the ends of policymakers to decide what it's the guidelines, the policy guidelines for Europe. TSOs are players that are going to respond to these guidelines, because if the guidelines is to develop more interconnections, the second questions we are going to ask is that are our investments be paid on a reasonable return, yes or no? If yes, we will do it. Otherwise, we won't do it. We are not going to risk to build projects that have no profitability or whatsoever. So I do agree to conclude. I do agree with what you're saying, but it's not in our hands to respond what you are saying. It's in the hands of policymakers, and TSOs are not policymakers.
Okay, thank you.
My only point was that when deciding all these multi-year, multi-billion projects, please take into account that the real action in the future will be a lot, and this is not either or, but a lot at local level, regional level, decentralized production on the consumer side, on the small scale scale, and what means intelligence, reactive, smart grids, and so on. And this has to be put in the same table and not forgotten. Thank you.
I would like to react on a couple of things. I do agree with you. Don't forget one thing. You were talking about renewables, connecting renewables. Your electricity still comes from nuclear also. That's what I tell a lot of people at home in Belgium. When we phase out, there will be still be nuclear energy coming from the Netherlands and from France. So it doesn't mean that you all of a sudden are a green country. So don't forget that. That's the first point. Second point is, I do agree with you on interconnectors and so on. We should have gone a lot faster in the past. I do think we are getting there before 2020. There's a connection with Norway, there's a connection again with my country, there's a new connection with France, there's a new connection with the Netherlands, and maybe this link. So I think it's good. I can only tell you one thing. As long as I remember, we are bordering Germany. Well, it's only in 2 years' time that we will have a direct interconnection with Germany. We don't have an interconnection with Germany up until today. In 2 years' time, it will be built. So to give you an idea, and that was political resistance from the German side, and then there were problems for building it on our side, and so on and so on. Then on the ladies' question, what is Spain and Portugal? I'm sorry, I know she asked it you, but I do want to answer that also, because I do follow the PCIs, the Projects of Common Interest. I mean, I don't hear a lot of Spain about Spain and Portugal talking about their own projects. I mean, if I see at my small country, we had four projects introduced. I do remember from Spain and Portugal there were only two. And again, I say the possibilities in Portugal and Spain are huge. If you look at Sener, they are licensing people in Pamplona. They were on top of the world, top of the business on renewables, and they are licensing people. Why is that? I mean, because there's no voluntarity, maybe. And now I'm going a step too far, maybe. But you have to look at yourself also, not always look at the others. That's my main message. And then somebody talked about capacity allocation and so on. That's what we have network codes for. And then the powers of the, and then I'm going to stop, and then the powers of the TSOs. Don't forget, there's a 10-year network development plans. The new one for 2014 is coming out, and they are starting on the 2016. And that's going to be of an influence of what is going to be built together with government.
We've now passed the 30 minutes of the time, and you need to go quickly to the end, but Marcel first, Thomas.
Thanks, Mr. Chair. Maybe two remarks, because we cannot do now go into more details. A special challenge to talk about interconnections, especially in Iberia, also is the fact that we have today a lot of overcapacities in the system. So assessing the benefit of interconnection becomes a quite tricky exercise, especially at regional level, if you don't take the full continent, at least continental view. This is one. And second, something that has not been mentioned also in the whole debate concerning interconnection, I am convinced that, for example, the funding or the financial instruments are not so key to realizing the investments or not. These you will find TSOs can find money for a project if the project is sound. But there is another issue also very much linked to the political institutions. The administrative procedures for interconnection are extremely overloaded, and as far as I remember, a lot of TSOs were claiming that the permitting procedures should be also in themselves, immediately after the political will, subjects to improvements. If there would be a single procedure for permitting procedures, there would be a dramatic help to implementation of already decided projects. Thank you.
Thank you. Just one remark. I just wanted to remind ourselves of the fact that Europe today has an overcapacity, a big overcapacity of electricity. Mm-hmm. So who is paying for that, that actually that is not used? It's only the business and the consumers. And that's a very good reason for interconnection. Thank you.
Well, thank you very much again, revisiting the common wisdom. We need the interconnections for reliability. Well, to a certain extent, yes, but much less than we did in the past. That's the truth. The technology and the algorithms, the software, allow us to provide services at local level. And you ask me, why is this not happening more? Answer is very easy, because regulation is not following technology. Because in Germany, in Portugal, in Spain, in all European countries, these local producers cannot, for instance, participate and benefit from system service markets, or only in a very limited way. So they have no remuneration for these services, and we are not using them. That's clearly a mistake. We need to correct these regulatory mistakes. If we do that, the economics are there. They can provide that. We have less need for reliability services being provided by the very expensive, very high voltage lines. We should share the benefits, yes, but your model is totally right if it is a free and efficient market where prices are free. But that's not what we are talking about. We are talking about subsidized prices. We are not talking about competition among different firms offering their prices. No, we are talking about a bunch of 80%, 85% in all countries. This percentage will increase. Okay, it is already 40-50% in many countries. I don't know the exact figures. I know the exact figure in Portugal because I had a PhD student doing a thesis and collecting the information. I know that in Spain it is already a huge amount, but we don't have the figures because people are ashamed of publishing these figures of the state-guaranteed prices effective in our member states today. And we should do that. But this means that we cannot apply the economic model of a free market to a market which is characterized by subsidized prices for at least 50% of the market. It just does not work conceptually. So we have to go for something different. And that brings me to the question, what are we doing wrong? Well, we are doing lots of wrong things in Portugal, I can assure you. But as regards the interconnection, the main political mistake we are doing is to embark enthusiastically on asking for more interconnection without knowing how the sharing of the benefits will happen in the future. Because if we keep the marginal model, the marginal market model we have today, the result will be sharing the benefits, increasing prices in Portugal. That's how the classical market works, okay? If it's not, then we have to define whether this is a bilateral long-term contract or what kind of animal this will be. We are not addressing these questions, and we are happily embarking on huge investments for interconnections that may well lead in the future to increasing prices in Portugal instead of bringing benefits for us. To give you a very simple example, when liberalization started, nobody knew who should pay VAT. It took us years until the Commission clarified that, and we started applying VAT properly to the generators and to the consumers. There are lots of very important, financially important questions that should be answered, clearly answered, before we embark on these dreams. But that's my point of view.
Thank you very much, and the discussion will follow in the dinner in the St. George Castle in Lisbon. Thank you very much.
And maybe that I give you some information. The dinner will start at 8:30 in the castle. I hope you all find your way. For those who are staying in the Lapa Palace Hotel, there will be buses leaving in, let's say, 3 minutes. So, follow me.
Posso dar uma palavra? Temos só aqui um segundo, estou aqui a tratar de uma coisa fundamental em
importância.
Quer saber?
Não, mas agora está com.
É isto? Mande-lhe um SMS.
Um SMS com uma proposta.
Está bem, com duas ou três datas.
Com duas ou três datas. Eu vou fora todas as semanas, mas todas as semanas estou cá.
Está bem.
Portanto, estou sempre dois, três dias.
Tive hoje uma ideia que poderia ser interessante para ajudar a explicar aquela questão da zona de Porto, que é esta. Nós tivemos o nosso seminário e estive a falar com a responsável de um centro de testes, da zona de Porto, no Morgan. E eles desenvolveram um conceito de uma boia que é basicamente que simula a rede. E os incentivos a pequenas potências, em vez de ligar o cabo interno, ligam esta boia. E ela cede todos os desenhos, tudo aquilo. E poderia ser interessante para ajudar a desbloquear.
Muito obrigado.
Pedir alguém para analisar com cuidado os desenhos, fazer uma análise de custos e tentar eventualmente ir por aí.
Mas mesmo
posso.
Eu
também vou-lhe falar, vou falar ao Tiago
com
isto. Mas era só para lhe dizer. Pode ser de uma forma.
Nem sequer era o aluno, era o sábio. Já tem muito bem fazer uma conversação.
Thank you.